You're listening to Clack Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. And now, Side B.
What are we talking about in regards to Elijah?
He's been in the news lately.
Yes.
So he has a new song with a certain Marshall Mathers.
Mm-hmm.
And recently today, he went on the medias of social and talked about how he felt about samples. So where would you like to start?
Let's start with the music first.
Okay. So the song is called Homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Features Eminem.
Yep.
It is... It's a lot of words being rapped on this song.
Rapidly.
Very quickly.
Yes.
White people like fast rapping.
Yes.
This is one of the key theories of Clack Radio Speakers.
Yes, it is. We were the first to expound on that theory.
Now, when I saw that this was a song, I immediately thought to myself, well, this is going to be hilarious.
Yes.
Let me say this. Considering how you and I feel about Logic,
mm-hmm.
considering what Eminem's guest appearances have sounded like for the last 5+ years.
Yes.
This could have been much worse.
Absolutely.
This isn't terrible.
I'm not mad at it.
They're not really rapping about much of anything except about how good their way of rapping is.
Logic, there's a point where Logic kind of points to his style of rap because he clearly listens to the show. And he's heard all the slander over the years and he finally decided to address us.
Well, and then what they close the song with, which is, what's the comedian's?
Chris D'Elia.
Right. Who has done a number of somewhat viral Eminem impersonations.
Mm-hmm.
So they get it, or at least Eminem gets it, or they, I don't know. This is one of those things where it's like, I appreciate that they're acknowledging that they get made fun of. Part of me wants them to say, look, if you're getting like mocked that much, maybe you should like try something different. But I almost have to respect how much they're owning it. Because like the two, both Logic and Eminem have built in really hardcore fan bases.
Yes.
who want to hear that style. So by doing a song together and by putting, you know, by putting the guy at the end mocking them, they can sort of wink to the critics and go, we get it. We understand. We hear it. We're laughing along as well, while also doing that exact same thing. And their fans are eating it up. And this is going to debut near the top of the Hot 100.
Yes.
Which is, that's pretty big for Logic.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I almost have to like tip my hat to Logic. Like I, you know, we make fun of him all the time on the show because his style is not what we want to hear. Sometimes he not just approaches, but zooms all the way past like self-mockery. But like, this is kind of a perfect move for him, right?
Relax with perfect.
It's a, given his audience, what they want to hear, the doubling down in certain hippity hoppity corners of the internet on like, I don't want to hear these mumble rappers.
Mm.
You know, a lot of grunting. Yes. And folded arms. Mm-hmm. Like given that, like this is a perfect song for that.
But I think that's the opposite spectrum of what they're doing. And I think personally it works against them, or not against them, but it's like, it sort of doubles down on the point.
Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
Because they're, and not Eminem as much, because I do think Eminem was just doing a lot of wordplay, which I appreciate, versus Logic, who was rapping about rapping. Mm. And he was cheating. He was doing the Busta Rhymes butter, butter, butter.
And I gotta get it.
And I gotta get it. Everybody. Black people!
That was coming.
Amazing. He was doing it, and I'm killing it, and I gotta kill it, and I gotta kill it, and I gotta kill it, kill it, kill it, kill it, kill it, and I gotta kill it, and I gotta get a butter, 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 and I woulda, shoulda, coulda, woulda, holla, 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 let me holla. He was doing a lot. And so I respect the mumble rapper per se, who for them, let's look at somebody like the baby. Like you could put the baby in that mumble rap category, though I don't think he mumble raps. But like the baby has wordplay. So he'll say, like, he'll say, you know, standard rapper braggadocious things, but he'll attempt to say it in a clever way. Versus him, versus Logic, who scoffs at somebody with a style like that, but then to me, raps about rapping, which is worse than at least attempting to just rap well. That doesn't work for me. I think Eminem's verse, we're talking about Logic, but I think we kind of understate Eminem's verse. Like, Logic finds the cheating pocket. It's the cheat pocket. It's the kill it, kill it, kill it, kill it. You say the words that you can say really fast and get away with rapping that fast. M's rapping and he's stringing words together and it's not like the stretchy, cringy, like battle rap wordplay that he does sometimes. It's like, okay, for 2019 Eminem, like I'm rolling. So I think we're talking about Logic. I think this actually plays to Eminem as well. I don't like the clip at the end because I feel like that wasn't an M move. I feel like that was like somebody on his team was like, yeah, you guys should do this. But if we're just talking about just rapping, I'm good with the Eminem verse. Like I applaud him for that.
It's fine.
I'd rather that than some of the stuff we've heard in the last 5 years that's been cringy. It's cringy.
Yeah.
Versus this, which is not cringy. So my Eminem standard in 2019 is, hey, don't be cringy. And he's switching flows and patterns and cadences and he slows down, he speeds up, like I'm rolling.
The switching flows, I was like, oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. That works.
Yep.
Okay.
I agree.
When is Logic's album coming out?
No.
Because this is going to be a huge look for him.
Absolutely. I'm glad he put it out as something independent versus him saying, I got an album coming soon. Or like the album's about to come out in 2 weeks. Like, let this live. Let this breathe. Give it its own space.
Yeah, the album is called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. No release date yet.
Of course. Speaking of albums,
yeah.
Before the show started, we were trying to figure out where the Logic piece of the Clock Radio Speakers bingo board came from, right? Mm.
Yes, we were.
And you happened to find it, correct?
I think we found it together.
Okay,
but,
so
by both at the same time, Googling Logic, Black People, amazing. Which, shout out to Google for immediately taking us to a song called Most Definitely.
Oh, you mean Most Definitely. That's basically what Google said. So I want to play that record before we get into the other Logic conversation and shut the show down.
Sure.
I haven't heard this song since we did the episode.
Okay. You probably jump ahead a little bit.
I want to hear how it comes on. I forgot it was a fast. Okay, I thought it was a double time drum.
It's No. It's definitely like White People Raise the Roof tempo.
Yes. Hold on. Oops. Sorry. All right. Here we go. Game like a chessboard. If you want to go to war, gotta bring your best sword. I feel like I'm going crazy, like I need a psych ward. Think my mind playing facade, but you gotta push through and persevere. Word of God. Trying to find a home, but I can't afford a home because I'm 25 and over 100 grand in student loans. Trying to get it, like a keychain. Do whatever. You can jump ahead a little bit more. I ain't be anybody that can hear. Just fight. Doc, I am jumping. Fight for the right. Fight for your life. Fight for what you believe is right. Fight for the right. Fight for your life. Fight
You're getting
for what
close.
You believe is right. All right. We legit have to make a Clock Radio Speakers bingo board before it's all said and done. We have to make one.
Okay.
Everybody. And I got to get it in. Okay. I'm sorry. All right. Okay. Let's rock.
All right.
Logic.
So Logic also made news today.
Yes.
He had a few things to say about samples.
Yes.
So first he takes to Twitter and says, just want to take a moment and say F sample clearance, F clearing samples, F people taking all producers' money for not doing some curse words there, and F the companies that say no just because this is hip hop. I'm tired of replaying. F the money. This is why mixtapes was so good. Then he did what everybody does in 2019, and he went to his notes app on his iPhone and typed a lot more. Mm-hmm. I'll read it as well because it's kind of useful. I think it's useful to frame the conversation. So he says, I quote, "I think it's insane an artist can do everything they can to track down, clear, and pay for a sample and give publishing to the original creator. And if they can't be found by the best sample people there are," and I'm going to interject here and say, there are people who work at various labels, right, who their job is to track people down. Because sometimes it's not easy to find someone to give to say yes for the rights. And if they can't be found by the best sample people there are, that a producer shouldn't suffer or lose a placement, and that the money in publishing should be set aside for them if they or anyone in their estate comes forward. He says, "I can re-record my raps over whatever. It's not about being told no. That's pretty easy to accept on the rare occasion it happens. No matter how attached to the original you may be, it's just hard to see young producers who could have life-changing placements torn from them because an artist has been unreachable for 20 years. He says, I think it would be dope to add stipulations for such situations. And then he talks about, he says, "I mean, sampling Can I Kick It," so the Tribe song, "and finding out Tribe owns zero publishing and I have to give up 100% of my publishing to Lou Reed and not Tribe Called Quest is insanity." So that last little bit is almost like, to me, a tangent from the main thing that he's talking about, right? Considering that he is working on an album, clearly, trying to, he's obviously at the point where they're like, okay, we've got it done. We're submitting stuff, et cetera. It's clear he worked with some new young producer, had a great sample, and couldn't get it cleared, and he's super frustrated. Totally get mm-hmm. that.
Right, right.
His initial message really caught fire because he's basically just saying, like, it was not nearly as nuanced as that longer statement was, right? I think there's a lot, like, you could sort of unpack from that, right? The problem of trying to track down who has rights on a particular song and getting approval for them, like, it's a problem. The whole concept of sample clearance is this place where, like, the U.S. notion of copyrights just hasn't evolved or adjusted or whatever to deal with a very postmodern genre like hip hop, right? Where hip hop is incorporating all sorts of elements from other types of music, but also in some cases is like, the sample isn't just, I picked a sample because it sounds good. Like, I picked the sample because I'm like, it like actually means something to the song. And like the song itself is kind of commentary on what I'm sampling. Like, that doesn't always happen, right? There are obviously cases where, I mean, Puff was famous for this, right? Like, you know, Puff is sampling it because he thinks it sounds good and because it was famous once upon a time and he can make it sound updated. That was his whole MO, right? But that's not how all sampling works. And that's not even how all Puff sampling worked. You know what I mean? But the way our country works is if you have publishing rights to a song, you have absolute control over what happens to that song. If you don't want one artist to use it, but you want another one to be able to use it, that is within your power. If you don't want any rapper to ever rap over it, that is within your power, for better or for worse. I like, at a practical level, I bet the music industry would love to come up with a, look, here's a standard, you know, here's a standard cut for sampling that will apply to 90% of artists. And these 10% of artists who are the biggest names, they get to set their own terms still, right? You want to go sample Michael Jackson, you got to go deal with his estate, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if you want to sample, you know, a niche 70s soul group from 1973 who put out one album, like, I bet you the music industry would love it if they didn't have to hire people to go do, like, find people for sample clearance. If they could just say, here's what we're going to do. We put aside, you know, we're going to say, you know, we sample something, we'll give you, I don't know, they'd have to negotiate a rate, et cetera, all this sort of stuff, come up with a number, it'd be like probably 25 or 50% or whatever it would be. And we set that money aside. And if you're an artist, you can claim it, et cetera, et cetera. But like, it doesn't really work that way, you know, especially because in many cases, especially from the era which hip hoppers, you know, rappers are sampling from, like the musician doesn't own the rights. It's not a one-to-one relationship between the musician and their music and who owns the rights. So that's like a complicating aspect of all this, right? You could be dealing with some large company who has bought their rights because they just want to like put it in, you know, commercials and movies and get paid out the nose to do that all the time. And why would they, you know, tarnish this plan they have for this artist catalog with what they see as not, this is just some, you know, some young kid, you know, making a vulgar record over this song that is supposed to be sweet and, you know, X, Y, Z.
Right.
There's all sorts of reasons that people have. And I, you know, it's, I recognize like I'm somebody who samples all the time. Like this is, you know,
I wanted to hear your perspective.
Well, right. I think that there is, I just think the reality of the situation is like, it's just going to take a long, I think it's going to be one of those things where it's going to take a long time. And then it's going to be a case where there are finally enough people who grew up on hip hop, who are then like the majority of people working at publishing houses, labels, you know, all up and down the line, where then they could, you know, it'll be like a, oh yeah, we should fix this sort of thing. It's going to be like no progress and then like a ton of progress.
Right.
It's going to be one of those hurry up and wait type things. But I just, you know, I hear Logic's frustration for sure, but like, I don't know. His comments were on Twitter were filled with folks both unknown and also even within the industry, which was really fascinating. It's so interesting to see like, oh, like that's a known producer I've heard of, like commenting on Logic's Twitter post to say like Buckwild, right, of DITC fame from the 90s, was like, yeah, you should know what stuff to sample and what stuff you can't get cleared. And I was like, okay. His comment was essentially, and then he talked a bit more and he was like, that's why the 90s were so dope for sampling. We didn't just sample anything. And I was like, okay. Not exactly, but sure. But yeah, I think this is a complicated situation. I'm surprised that Logic has gotten to this step to this stage in his career that he has. And this frustration's coming out now. This isn't his, it's not like you could imagine someone who's like comes up on mixtapes and then they get their first album on Def Jam and all of a sudden they can't clear stuff. Like that's when you would totally expect the frustration, right? But like, so that tells me that it must have been a case where like it's like somebody he knows or like some like new producer who he met and he like is cool with. And like he really, I think this is a very personal thing for him. You know what I mean? But yeah. Armand, you as a rapper and also as a music fan, when you see Logic rant, you know, sort of, I don't say ranting, but we'll say not, you know, being pretty negative about sample clearance and the whole process and what that means, what's your take on that?
I think I'd pretty much agree with everything that you said. It's really hard to say. It's hard to say because I'm not in that world. You know, like when I dig for samples to maybe send to you or a couple of my other producer friends, like I don't really dig that deep. So I imagine that like my bag is probably easy to clear. But you know, if you're a guy who really digs, I think about that with somebody like Griselda or Alchemist, like they find the rarest, like super rare stuff. And it's like, you're putting out content at such an alarming rate. Do you clear? You know, what does that look like when you don't clear for maybe an indie artist? Logic's on Def Jam, so he's got the machine behind him. But as an indie artist, what do you do when, you know, Conway and Benny sample something or Alchemist sample something for like some beat tape that only gets, you know, 20,000 streams on Spotify, and the producer says, well, give me my money. And we're like, well, this really didn't generate a whole lot of money to give you. Like, that's the perspective I come from. Like, how does that work? What does that look like?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So I don't know. So it's interesting because again, this is a part of the transitional period of music that, you know, we talk about where people are trying to figure it out. Sample clearances is now one of the things that people are trying to figure out. You know, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I think
what does that look like now?
I think there's a lot of people who just aren't clearing samples, frankly.
Sure.
I think it's a, well, let's see what happens if we get caught.
Sure.
I think for the bigger name artists, especially songs that are singles or songs that, like, you know, like Drake is clearing his samples, right? Logic's, even someone at Logic's, you know, stature, which, you know, dude's albums go number one. So, like, he's clearing samples, right? But, like, you know, is Griselda clearing all those samples that are just showing up on the random quote unquote mixtapes that pop up on streaming services? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I think in a sense it is kind of whack-a-mole, right? Because like if you sample and you don't clear it and you put on a streaming service, it's not like Spotify has some algorithm that's like going through your music and it's like, aha, I noticed you flipped this sample. Now pay up. It's like you're basically waiting for a cease and desist, right? You're waiting for a lawyer to come after you and say, oh, you got to take that down or you got to pay up or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I wonder if some of it is like with the flood of content, like how do you keep up?
Right.
Right. So you got to hire people just to go and listen to new stuff to see if your songs are being sampled and they're not supposed to. I mean, I don't think that's exactly how it works. It's a really tough situation too, right? Because like, I think it just comes down to like, you know, do you think of sampling as I'm borrowing or stealing from someone else? Or do you think of sampling as I'm using this as like a part of my palette and I'm making something totally different. And I'm just using music that's already been recorded as a way to do that. It depends if basically, do you think sampling is art or not? You know what I mean? And there are a lot of people, even in 2019, who still are like, nah, you're sampling because it's a shortcut.
Right. So then you've got people who sample, you know, people who make their packs. Now, I think that was Frank Dukes who kind of started that wave or made it famous, right?
Yeah. Now, you know, all sorts of people are doing that. You know, longtime friend of the show, Wes Pendleton, is doing that with Soul Surplus, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah, that's definitely a thing as well.
Man. Just a new regime is coming, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is one of those cases where like it's interesting to talk about the sample clearance. I think specifically for Logic, I think this is a really good example of where like that 280 character limit on Twitter, you know, it's more than it used to be, but when you're really hot about something,
it's still not enough.
There's not a lot of nuance.
Correct. Especially nowadays where Twitter is so cut and dry, where it used to be very much people would give you the benefit of the doubt generally. Now it's like if you don't say exactly what you mean, exactly in the wording, exactly in that one tweet, you might be able to get off a thread every once in a while. But if you don't say it exactly the way that you intend to say it, it's a wrap.
Yeah. Actually, can I rant about something real quick?
Please.
And this is going to sound really rich coming from me.
Okay.
Everybody's a critic, man. And here's what I mean.
Oh, man, we're having this conversation on Clock Radio Speakers. Hold on. Oh. Go ahead.
In our culture, like everybody has a publishing tool now called social media. And because like media is more fractured than it's ever been before.
Yes.
Right. But there are still things in our culture that become these flashpoints and like everybody is actually watching it or talking about it or whatever.
Yes.
And for those moments, right, whether it's the Avengers movie, whether it's Game of Thrones, like in 2 months from now, it's going to be some other like, oh, this is a cultural thing that we're all doing. And everybody becomes like, if it's a film, all of a sudden everybody's a film expert. Mm. It's like, you know, it's like, and part of that, there's a lot of reasons for that, right? Like the internet has broken down the barrier for not just publishing, but also like all, like you could do your own research and your own, and you can learn on your own and you can learn a lot about how, you know, film or how this works, or for music, you can learn a lot about like how music is made, and you can there's less of a barrier and expertise in our country and our culture in general. It's just not valued the way it used to, right? Because a lot of people feel like, well, I can learn it just as well as you can. You know, yeah. Like, what do I need an expert to tell me? I can do the research myself, right? But like, this is how you end up with people thinking that, you know, vaccines cause autism, and now you have like measles outbreaks in our country because
yes,
people have decided they are medical experts.
Yes.
Right? With Game of Thrones, which is a show I watch and enjoy because this is not the greatest season ever. Everybody knows that. But like, it's so weird to be a fan of something where like in real time, near real time, you're just like, people are like just breaking, like they're trying to like break this down at like an unbelievable level. And like, look, criticism's good. Like, I love to read criticism. I mean, we are critics on this show for sure. But there is something about the echo chamber of criticism that like makes it not fun to be a fan sometimes.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's like, man, like it's one thing if you hear, okay, you're like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I didn't really think about it that way. It's critical. But like, because social media rewards, you know, it rewards and amplifies voices in certain ways. Like, it just becomes this, like, it's like take after take after take. And it's like, okay, I get it. You win. It's fine. You know, it's just like, I don't want to hear it anymore.
Yes.
And like, we're going to see it with politics. Like, it is a way that our culture works now. I'm just not enjoying it, you know? Right. And like, I recognize that's just real rich coming from me, right? Where it's like, oh, Doc's talking about critics. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you and I are critics of lots of things, right? I don't think that you have to have, done something at a high level in order to critique it. I don't think you have to have been a director to critique movies. I don't think you have to have been a basketball player to critique basketball. I don't think you have to have been a musician to critique music. I do think, however, that when I said those phrases, I was thinking like in singular examples.
Mm-hmm.
I think by and large, it is still valuable to have expertise.
Yeah.
I think it still matters. I think there's a shortage of, maybe not even a shortage of expertise. There's a real value imbalance right now with how we all talk about expertise. You know, like, yes. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I could follow a bunch of random people on Twitter to like get my MBA analysis, or I could like, you know, have a mix of really smart players, really smart journalists. Like, there's a middle layer there. And we've swung so far to the like hot takes on Twitter and Reddit and all that other stuff. And I'm just, I'm not enjoying it as a fan, man. I don't know how you feel about it, but it's just not. There are times where I'm just like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. So I think the most important thing to find out or to focus on when we're talking about that is the why. So what is the purpose or what is the end goal of the critique? So if it's to, you know, make something better. So if it's an artist who makes music and his fans critique his work and he sees that criticism and he knows that criticism comes from a healthy place where his audience wants to see him get better, and he takes those critiques into consideration, and then the next go around his music is better, it's healthy. Or if it's a thing where something that people often credit Clock Radio Speakers for, it's how you engage music, where there are so many other intangibles that we've discussed on this show. And there's an audience for that. You know, our audience is pretty smart. They're pretty intelligent. They're really nerdy and nuanced in terms of how they listen to music. So the little intangibles may not ever get to the artist, but the community that we've created and communities that are similar, now we learn how to engage music for each other. So I've heard, you know, our audience sort of, they'll push back on stuff that we say, and I'll say, man, I never thought about it that way. And so when I approach or engage that art again, I'm approaching it with a wider scope that is beneficial to me as a consumer and as an enjoyer of art. But now it's like it's critique that points back to the critiquer versus the art, where now it's like, come listen to me critique everything and praise me for my critique versus here's a critique because I want to see this be better. Like if the focus and the end goal is to be on the critiquer versus the critiqued, then that's not it. And so it's not fun, because when you don't have those safe spaces, people will, you know, we talk, everybody on social media, like they generally want to get jokes off. They want to go viral. They want, again, they want the focus of the topic to go back to them. You'll see something go viral, and then under it, they're promoting themselves. Watch my video. Go to my page. I have this going on. So to me, that's like the heart of critique isn't necessarily, it's not done in the right spirit. It's not done with the right motive. And that's why it's not fun anymore. Because we're not trying to make each other better. We're not trying to make the art better. We're just trying to get our comeuppance. And that takes the fun out of it. So yeah, I agree with you. It's not fun. It's not even fun to engage. It's overwhelming and it's exhausting. So I think that's why, instead of, you know, talking about things in real time like we used to do, I go to my text messages now. God bless the group chat. You know, Doc, you and I've noticed we talk more on the phone than we do on the show. We normally just saved it for the show. And there's still a degree of that works, that we still do. But like, there's certain things that you just want to get off. And maybe 5 years ago, you could have got that off on social media. Now you're just like, I'm going to send this to Armand and we're going to talk about it. And we talk about this whole idea. And maybe the back end of the conversation makes it to the show. But it's like a healthy space, because, you know, it's not just some random person that's following us that may just want to get their jokes off, or they don't like how we critique something, or they want to be their own Clock Radio speakers, so they want us to notice them, that they critique things as well as they believe that we do. It's just not fun.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about with logic right now?
Black people! Amazing. Stupendous. Outrageous. Black people!
So that's a no. So nothing else on logic, huh?
Why was that beat so fast?
Yeah, that's a... it's interesting, right? It's one of the interesting things about how rap has evolved is, you know, rappers used to, as the tempo slowed down, they'd be like, oh, well, I guess I have to be like Bone Thugs and Twista, and I'm going to speed it up. Mm-hmm. Of course, one of the innovations, I'm using that word sort of jokingly, but not really. Like, one of the innovations of modern trap music is, no, actually, you can rap slow too, on the slowest of beats, and people will be just fine with it if you can be engaging.
Yeah.
Now, the rapping fast over fast beats, that's I hear that, and I think to myself, that is not somebody who has thought a lot about how they're going to perform this live. Because if it's a fast tempo, then you're probably moving around on stage a little bit, right?
Yes.
And if you're moving around on stage, are you really rapping that fast and still keeping that breath control?
Yes.
Or are you punching in like Mega Montana and Billy Ray Cyrus?
Guitar. Yes.
That song is still number one.
Still number one.
Oh, man.
Did we talk about that? We talked about that. That's not a good song, right? You said you like it.
I like that song.
Yeah. I think I feel bad for Lil Nas X now, because we talked about this, like, he posted a snippet for another song.
Yeah.
And it was like a typical trap record, and people were like, nah. And then I just noticed he had his sneaker shopping with Complex, and he had on a cowboy hat, all denim, with some cowboy boots. So it's like his label was straight up like, all right, you're going to be the cowboy rapper. So when this dies down, like, it's going to be really hard to get his audience to make him, to get his audience to listen to something else.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I mean, what's funny, right? I mean, what's kind of funny is like he sort of unwittingly stumbled into a sound that I think people might want. Maybe that's not what he thought he was doing. He thought it was a song. He didn't think he was making a sound. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about this week, man?
Nah, I think I'm good.
Thank you, everybody, as always, for listening. We appreciate it. Follow at CRS Podcast on Twitter. Head to clockradiospeakers.com for all your Clock Radio Speakers needs. Armand, nothing else to plug, correct?
Not at the moment, but soon, yes.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, and we'll be back soon.